Well, hey, welcome to another episode of Ask Pastor Adam. And what I want to do in this episode is I want to take us a little bit deeper into telling the story of Jesus without making it weird. But before I do that, I want to tell you a story about one of my favorite evangelists, D.L. Moody. If you don't know who D.L. Moody is, you got to think Billy Graham before Billy Graham, okay? So one Sunday afternoon, D.L. Moody was confronted by a very agitated churchgoer. "Are you D.L. Moody?" "I am," Mr. Moody replied. "Sir," the churchgoer huffed, "I don't like the way that you do evangelism." Well, D.L. Moody looked the man over and replied, "Sir, I like my way of doing evangelism better than your way of not doing evangelism." I love that story, and I'm using it to say this. Even weird evangelism is better than no evangelism at all. People and churches that obey Jesus' command to make disciples are way healthier than those who do not go and tell. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you're doing some of the stuff that I think is weird, I just want you to know I'm more for you than I am against you. That said, I do think that we need to pay attention to the pattern and the approach of evangelism that we see in the New Testament, especially in regards to the use of culture. This was the tried and true principle of one of the greatest evangelists who ever lived, the Apostle Paul. And this was his principle. He says this in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. "To the Jews, I became like a Jew." Why did he do that? Well, he did it to win the Jews. "To those not having the law," that's his way of talking about Gentiles, "I became like one not having the law." Well, what was his aim? So as to win those not having the law. And so you could see this principle of cultural appreciation and some accommodation played out as you watch Paul work his way, you know, throughout the Roman Empire telling the story of Jesus. If you look at Acts chapter 13 and Acts chapter 17, these are displayed perfectly. In Acts chapter 13, the Apostle Paul is trying to win Jews. And you'll notice if you open that passage up that they shared the same method of communication. I mean, he was in a synagogue, and it wasn't weird for Paul to get up and preach. In fact, they asked him to do so. They shared the same story. They all knew about the Exodus, and they were all waiting for the promise of a king, of a Messiah. They also all spoke the same spiritual language. They were familiar with the Bible, and so because they were, Paul quotes it. But now, just set this side by side with what you see in Acts chapter 17. Very different culture. You know, Paul chooses here in Acts chapter 17 a different communication venue to tell the story. And he picks one that they were comfortable with. He goes to the marketplace. This was the place where you got information and you got to exchange ideas. Since they didn't share the same story, Paul has to start at the very beginning of the big story of the Bible. He's got to talk about what God is like. He's got to talk about the first man, Adam. He talks about sin. He talks about Jesus. And then he talks about the final judgment. Also, they didn't share the same spiritual language. In fact, some of the philosophers there accused Paul of being a pseudo-intellectual. And there was some confusion about whether or not Paul was even preaching two deities. He was talking about Jesus and the resurrection. So you'll note that our culture has moved on past Christianity. We're less like Acts 13, and we're more like Acts 17. So how does the gospel advance in a place where you no longer share the same story or the same language? Well, in Acts chapter 17, we see the way. We see the gospel advancing as Paul uses points of cultural contact in order to win them to Christ. You'll note Paul doesn't directly quote Moses or David as he does in the synagogue, but instead he quotes a pagan poet Aretas as a point of contact. So the gospel advances not by disregarding culture, but by finding points of contact and then building a bridge to the gospel. But the gospel also advances with points of conflict. This is important. Paul tells the story of Jesus, and when he gets to the part about God raising him from the dead, some of the people mock him because the thought of God raising a person from the dead was just plain silly to them. So, you know, here's my point. The gospel advances both with points of contact and points of conflict. I want you to notice I'm talking more about method here than I am about message. Or I'm talking about how we message the message, right? The gospel message, the story of Jesus, will always be silly and scandalous to people who are perishing. In Paul's day, it was silly to proclaim that God raised a man from the dead. The Greco-Romans were trying to escape their bodies, not spend an eternity in a new one. Meanwhile, the Jews were deeply offended by the idea of a crucified king. Well, what about today? Today, the story of Jesus is still silly and still scandalous to some people. In fact, a famous and now dead scoffer likened belief in an afterlife, which would include a resurrection, to a fairy tale for adults that are afraid of the dark. Of course, I'm talking about renowned physicist Stephen Hawking here. Meanwhile, it's deeply scandalous to tell modern people that Jesus is the only way to God and that they're bad enough to need his rescue in the first place. So the gospel advances both by points of cultural contact, but also by points of conflict. And, you know, people already find some of these truths, these points of conflict, unbelievable. What I'm saying is, let's not trip them up by making our communication of the message weird in the first place. So what I want to do is just kind of share some of the top three ways that I think we make telling the story of Jesus unnecessarily weird. Here's my first one. If you want to make it weird, make it gimmicky. In today's postmodern world, people put a huge value on authenticity, don't we? So anything gimmicky is just, it's moving in the wrong direction. For example, I have a few gospel tracts that look like $100 bills. But upon closer examination, they're not money, they're actually a gospel tract. So what a well-meaning Christian will do is they'll slide it underneath a vending machine and then they'll wait for an unsuspecting non-Christian to walk by and, you know, what would you think if you saw it? Money, right? So they stop and they take a closer look and they investigate it and then they discover that it's not real. Well, to me, this just feels way too much like a bait and switch, and nobody likes a bait and switch. Plus, it's gimmicky in an age that values authenticity. So let's not do that, okay? Here's another way to make it weird. We can use the wrong method. You know, the way cultures communicate changes over time. For instance, when I first started dating my wife, Renal, I actually had to handwrite my love notes out and then pass them to her. In fact, I still have a stack of them today because I'm over sentimental and I can't throw them out, right? Well, I don't think kids do that today. Today, you send a text or you use Tinder and you swipe left or you swipe right. Things change. And that's true in telling the story of Jesus as well. Growing up, I can remember waking up on a Saturday morning to go door to door to tell the story of Jesus. And as intimidating as that might sound, there was a time in our culture where that wasn't weird. It was normal. It was even expected. And in fact, the way we built our houses, it was just expected that we would entertain people. Porches were built big and they were built to wrap around the front of the house. And and people entertained their friends and their strangers on the front porch. Salesmen went door to door, and nobody locked their doors. Well, today it's very different, isn't it? The front porch is a stoop, and it's not designed for a long conversation. We got patios in the backyard for that, and they're big and they're beautiful, but you can only get there by invitation only. Moreover, people don't feel safe anymore. If you come to my door, the first thing that I do is I peep through the spy hole. And if I open it, you got like 30 seconds to tell me who you are and what you want before I send you on your way. In addition to that, the only people who show up at my door are either selling stuff that I don't want or they belong to a cult, which is weird, right? So door-to-door just feels like the wrong method to me. It feels weird to me. And if your culture is like mine, well, let's not do that. Here's another way that we can make it weird. We could ask the right question at the wrong time. So here is what I think is the right question. You might ask somebody, excuse me, if you died tonight and God were to ask you why he should let you into his heaven, what would you say? You know, this is a great question. We should be asking this. I hope every single one of us listening gets the opportunity and has the boldness to ask somebody this question, because the death rate is still one per person. And the Bible says we're appointed to die once and then comes the judgment, and you got to have Jesus. So that's why this is such a great question. We should be asking it. But it's not a conversation starter. If you think about how conversations work in our culture, well, they never start with deep values and deep truths. They begin with small talk. We talk about the weather or the sports or what we did this weekend or, you know, what our kids are involved in. This is the normal or the natural realm. And then as a person gains trust, which could even happen quickly and even with strangers, but as we gain trust, the conversation can be moved from the normal to the super normal, which is where we get to talk about God and we get to talk about Jesus. Just springing God talk on somebody feels weird. I know this from experience. Let me share one of my mission fails with you. So in all of my small group communities, I call them life transformation groups, we always end our gatherings talking about mission. We always are talking about who we're telling the story of Jesus to. And so very often what I'll do is I'll throw a challenge out to the men to ask them to do something missional. And so one of the challenges I threw out was to say, hey, you know, find somebody that you can pray for. You know, ask them if you can pray for them. You know, find a complete stranger that you can do this with. So the next group meeting was coming, and I hadn't asked anyone yet if I could pray for them. So, you know, it was Sunday night, the life group meets Monday morning, and I went out for ice cream, and as the server was making change, I just blurted out, you know, can I pray for you? She was so stunned by the question and weirded out by the lack of smooth transition that she said nothing. It got really awkward in that silence. And so I just took my change, I smiled at her, and I said, have a great day, and I walked out. Mission fail, right? I made it weird. Let's not do that, right? Well, I said three, let me give you a fourth. Here's another way to make it weird. We can use Christian language that our friends don't understand. You know, our friends who are unfamiliar with the Bible, they're not going to be on the same semantic page as us, and it may actually take several conversations to communicate what we mean by certain words. Take the word sin, for example. We can't tell the story of Jesus without talking about his dying for our sins. But, you know, what do they think? What do you think a non-Christian is thinking when they hear the word sin? If all they know about sin comes from advertising, well, they're more likely to associate sin with really good chocolate or really sexy lingerie, right? I mean, I could just imagine them thinking, well, that's weird. What does God have against chocolate, right? Or they might think of sin as a slight breaking of the rules, kind of like doing 50 in a 30 mile per hour zone. And what's the harm in that as long as nobody gets hurt? And does God really send people to hell for doing a little bit over the speed limit? And if he did, who would want to worship a God like that in the first place, right? You see what I mean? So as Christians, when we use a word like sin, we're not trying to say that God's opposed to chocolate or lingerie in its proper context, and nor are we trying to say that sin is like doing 50 in a 30 mile per hour zone. No, what we mean when we say sin is that our rejection is that it's a way of talking about our rejection of God, and that it has less to do with breaking rules and more to do with breaking relationships. Or take the word lost. Without a working knowledge of Jesus' parables, calling a person lost is not just weird, but we could run the risk of needlessly offending a person. You know, suppose you're not familiar with Jesus' real-to-life stories about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a son. What does the label lost sound like to you? Well, to me, it sounds like a person who's too stupid to get on Google Maps or too stubborn to ask for directions. But if you're familiar with Luke 15, you know that a lost sheep, a lost coin, or a lost son has incredible value to the person searching for them. So much so that God throws a big party in heaven every time a lost sinner comes to their senses and turns back to him. You see, without knowing Luke chapter 15, would you ever get the idea that being lost means that you have incredible worth to God? So these are all ways of making it weird, and all I'm saying is let's not do that. So let me pull this little session together. I've been calling this a spirit-led approach to telling the story of Jesus, and since no significant kingdom work happens without prayer, before we get into the next sessions, I'd like to just get us praying for people who matter to God and have incredible worth to him. So would you take out a 3x5 note card and ask God to give you 3 to 5 names of people that are currently in your sphere of influence, and just begin praying a simple prayer. God, would you open up so-and-so's heart to respond to the story of Jesus? And would you give me boldness and opportunity to show and tell it? And let me tell you, friends, that is going to be a prayer that God will delight to answer. So next time we're going to look at the importance of developing relationships with people. But until then, just remember, Jesus changes everything.